This is Your Wetlands. I'm Jerry Kay, and this is Thursday, November 15th, 2007. And on this report, we provide an update regarding the San Francisco Bay oil spill. We're joined by Christine Abraham with PRBO Conservation Science, Brooke Langston with the Richardson Bay Audubon Center, Gary Langham with Audubon California, Marilyn Latta with Save San Francisco Bay, and Caroline Warner with the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture. First, to you, Christine, what is your assessment regarding the impact of this oil spill?
We are probably getting close to, I don't have exact numbers this morning, we're probably getting very close to 2,000 birds total, and that's live and dead. We're probably between 1,200 and 2,000 birds. I'm sorry, I don't have exact numbers right now. What we're seeing are mostly scoters and small grebes, with a mixture of western grebes and some other species as well. We've gotten some scops, some lesser and greater scops, some gulls, but definitely mostly small grebes and scoters, surf scoters so far. Birds are arriving at the facility with varied amounts of oil on them, from just a dime-sized spot, which is definitely enough to compromise their waterproofing and result in hypothermia and death, ultimately, if they're not captured and treated, to birds that are arriving completely soaked in gooey tar from the tip of the beak to the tip of the tail.
Is there anything at this point that's been surprising, either the range from where species of birds are coming from, their condition, the numbers, anything that is somewhat not typical or surprising?
You know, I'm actually surprised that we're not getting more shorebirds in. I'm a little surprised about that. We've gotten one or two shorebirds in so far, so I'm surprised at that a little bit.
Let's move to Brooke Langston with Richardson Bay Audubon Center.
From this perspective, Richardson Bay Audubon Center is a 49-year-old community environmental education center. And from this perspective, we have had an amazingly positive outpouring of support from the broader community. Everyone from Brownie troops who want to help somehow to the fire station. NOAA and the National Estuarine Research Reserve have been a great support to us. Our funders, both individuals and foundations, are wondering how they can help and what our immediate response has been. I think it's been as tragic and horrible environmentally as it is, for the community as a whole, it's been a very, from my perspective, a bonding, bringing together of people with the right resources at the right moment to see what we can all do to fix this.
And Gary Langham from Audubon, California.
I have personally been out on the bay at Richardson Bay Sanctuary, and we have seen things similar to what Christine was outlining just in our 900-acre sanctuary. As of 2 days ago, we had seen 219 birds that have been affected by the oil in a dozen species. We are also not seeing very many shorebirds, but we did have one willet that had some minor oil on it. Mostly scoters are being affected, and as of 2 days ago, we had 11 dead scoters on our reserve. I think the kind of bigger picture thing with it is this is really a terrible timing for birds that are using the Pacific Flyway right now. All the birds that had been breeding in Alaska and in the boreal forest and tundra of Canada, you know, millions of individual birds are moving through, and this is nearly the peak time. And because we have developed so many of our wetlands in California, the Bay Area is even in increasing importance for these species that are moving through, taking a break as they're migrating and trying to refuel. So we have a lot of birds that are flying in every night that are encountering this oil as well.
This is Christine. I just also wanted to say that although you're absolutely right, this is the worst time of year, perhaps, for fall migrating birds. Just the sheer volume of birds that are migrating through this area and using this as a stopover. But also, on the other hand, if a spill happens, it couldn't happen in a better place. I know that sounds weird to say, But we have, right here in San Francisco Bay, incredible infrastructure for dealing with oil spills. We have incredible oil spill facilities. We have incredible numbers of trained oil spill response staff here in our own backyard.
With Safe San Francisco Bay, let's go to Marilyn Latta. Marilyn?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I feel so confident about the coordination of the response. Save the Bay has been very concerned about the delay, the initial delay, and then the lack of coordination that was done well in the first few days after the spill. We're demanding a full investigation into the accident's causes, and we're supporting state and federal oversight hearings that will reveal what went wrong. Our staff and volunteers are documenting spill impacts through video and photographs so that we can get this information to the agencies to quantify the extent of damage. And we've definitely also had a huge outpouring of support from our members. So we're working to provide the public with the best information about the disastrous spill. I personally have been out on multiple boat surveys and land surveys to specifically look at the subtitle eelgrass and oyster beds. These are very hard hit. I've been to Fort Baker, Angel Island, Emeryville, Keller Beach in Richmond, sections of Tiburon and Kyle Cove and Belvedere were the hardest hit I've seen. So very heavy toxic fumes. In addition to the tar balls that cleanup crews can actually pick up, I've seen sections of shoreline that just look like they were painted with oil. So that type of cleanup is going to be very difficult.
This is Your Wetlands. I'm Jerry Kay. We're doing an update on the spill in San Francisco Bay. I think probably the public and certainly the news media is going to be focusing on two aspects to this. The spill itself, prevention of further spills or future spills, how this specific spill was handled in the seconds and minutes afterwards. And in addition, the second thrust obviously will be how to deal with it. In the days ahead, we're curious about what you're going to be focusing on with respect to this specific oil spill.
Brooke Langston, Richardson Bay Audubon Center. We are in a fortunate position right now because we have been working with a consortium of organizations around the Bay for the last 18 months, including Save the Bay, who Marilyn Latta is representing this morning, as well as NOAA, the National Estuarine Research Reserve, and San Francisco State University. All of these partners have been working for the last 18 months on native oysters and native eelgrass restoration and research in several sites around the Bay. So we are in the fabulous position right now of having 18 months worth of baseline data to know what the conditions were in terms of oysters and eelgrass and sediment and fish and water quality. And Marilyn, if I'm forgetting anything, include it. But we've got great baseline data for what this ecosystem looked like for the 18 months pre-oil spill. And that same group of people will be getting together very soon to map out the next phase of our research and our restoration efforts for the months to come to see how we gather the right data. Marilyn mentioned that she's already her portion of the team has already started looking at the immediate impacts on the eelgrass beds we've been restoring. But we'll also do that going forward, the long-term impacts on these ecosystems. It'll be months before we know the full implication of the health of, the impact of this spill on these ecosystems. And we are looking forward to setting a research plan going forward to get to see what that implication is.
Yeah, this is Marilyn from Save the Bay, if I might add to that. It is really positive thing. We have so much data from the last 18 months, and we actually had just been getting to the point with San Francisco State and NOAA of documenting true success with eelgrass restoration techniques at sites on the Marin shoreline. So it's very unfortunate that at this point the oil spill is reaching some of those sites. So we're working hard to document these spill impacts, and there are response teams now going out to run surveys along the exact same transects that were run just as recently as last month. So that's very good pre and post data that it will help to provide more information about exact impacts. We're also advising key elected officials and agencies to improve the cleanup coordination, spill preparedness and response, and the damage assessment. And then we're incorporating information about the spills into our education and outdoor programs. We've already canceled several of our canoe and restoration site programs at sites that are affected or have oiled birds showing up. I think one of the main messages that needs to get out to the public is the beaches are closed not only to protect human health and protect people from trying to actually go, you know, save birds on their own without training, but the public access itself is scaring all of these birds and marine mammals and wildlife back into the oily waters. So it's very important to avoid the Bay Trail, avoid public beaches at this point. That being said, if people do have documentation of the impacts from the first week in their shoreline areas, we certainly want to get that because Save the Bay is not yet confident that everything is being documented by the agencies. And we're afraid that that won't translate into the right amount of funds and cleanup response in the future. So I just want to mention that that information or photos can be sent to photos@savesfbay.org.
Well, this is Christine again. In my organization, two of the staff, myself and Diana Humpel, were both staff biologists at PRBO, and we run a team called the Wildlife Processing Unit. And this is a team of about 50 trained biologists spread out across the state of California that we train in our specific protocols to respond to spills. Now, the Wildlife Processing Unit is a component in the incident command structure for the state of California, and we have a contract or an MOU with the state to respond to spills if we're deployed. And what we do primarily is the scientific and data evidentiary collection, meaning that we're identifying species, we're collecting evidence, physical evidence such as feather samples, photographs, the extent of oiling, where birds are oiled, how oiled they are, for both live and dead birds. Collecting information from both live and dead birds is crucial for estimating the actual total impact of a spill on wildlife populations, because what a lot of people don't, or what a lot of people forget is that the number of birds collected during an oil spill represents a very small fraction of the number of birds affected. And we like to use the 10% rule in generality. If the number of birds collected during a spill may represent only 10% of the number of birds affected. So if 1,000 birds are collected, that means 10,000 birds were actually affected. And that's because a lot of species are never found. A lot of pelagic species sink and they never wash up on beaches and they're swept out to sea and that kind of thing. And so there are some very sophisticated statistical models that estimate the actual impact to populations.
What other thoughts do you have directed at the public?
This is Christine from PRBO. I think that, again, to reiterate, they're just discouraging the public from going out and collecting birds if they have not been trained. There are systematic beach search and collection protocols, and there are people who are going out and collecting birds from beaches as much as humanly possible. We're trying to mobilize more trained biologists. At PRBO, we've now got some trained biologists who have been mobilized to do beach search and collection. This bunker fuel is really, really nasty stuff, and we just don't want the public to expose themselves to this toxic chemical. We, again, don't want them trying to capture animals without proper training because they will scare them back into the water, which might increase the amount of oil that the birds are exposed to. So that would be one of my main messages. And also, if they're looking for a way to help, they can call one of the volunteer hotlines that are available because there are other things that need to be done during oil spill response.
That are equally critical.
That are equally critical, even if it's somebody who is, I mean, we have volunteers here at the Cordelia Center for doing laundry for 18 hours a day, and having clean laundry is absolutely crucial for these birds to support them in cages and to help dry them off and to keep them covered during medical exams so they don't more frightened and more stressed. This is an incredibly stressful experience physically for the birds. and there are opportunities for people to get involved doing other things.
And speaking of opportunities, Caroline Warner joins us with the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture. Caroline, does the joint venture website have some leads and tips and suggestions for people?
Yeah, at www.sfbayjv.org, you can get right on the links to all of our partners on this call and others who are responding to this bill.
A closing question for you, and whoever wants to jump in is free to do so. The media tends to be event-oriented. They do a reasonably competent job of covering an event such as this oil spill. But the process of recovery, which can go on for days and months and even years, they tend, in some cases, to lose interest. What is your concern as we move forward here that you want to make sure the public knows as you go forward with your efforts at restoration and cleanup, et cetera?
This is Marilyn. I'll jump in from Save the Bay. We definitely want to make sure the media keeps a spotlight on the issue because the long-term damage can be extensive. I know I was talking with one of our partner groups in Rhode Island, Save the Bay out there. They had a major spill 7 years ago and are just seeing a comeback to their lobster fishery this year. So we're still gathering information and working the best we can to assess those long-term damages. But in the meantime, Save the Bay, Richardson Bay Audubon, many of the groups on this call do host regular volunteer restoration events and cleanups. And I think that's especially critical at this point that, you know, we need to avoid the oiled beaches at this point. But there are cleanups happening this weekend. For instance, Save the Bay is hosting 3 restoration plantings at clean sites where people can come out and protect the health of the bay. And I know that's true for many of the partners on this call. So we want to make sure that the public doesn't feel, yet again, that San Francisco Bay is damaged beyond belief, but that we can all work together to continue to improve it.
Brooke from Richardson Bay Audubon, my hope is that this is a reiteration to this great, amazing, environmentally sensitive, smart, mobilizable community, that this bay is fragile and critical and vital and reachable. So many, as somebody said earlier, when oil spills happen in the Black Sea or in Russia or off the coast of Japan, no one can do anything about it. And we can do something about this, not only this oil spill, but the health of this bay going forward for many years. And I hope that this is a reminder that this fragile bay is right here for all of us to jump in and take care of, and to go to the Joint Venture website or to Save the Bay's website or to Audubon's website and find ways to volunteer long-term. This is a long-term effort here, the health and revitalization of this bay, and there's great ways for folks to jump in the months to come.
And we have to leave it right there. I want to thank you all, Christine Abraham with PRBO Conservation Science, Brooke Langston with the Richardson Bay Audubon Center, Gary Langham with Audubon California, Marilyn Latta with Save San Francisco Bay, and Caroline Warner with the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture. The website again is sfbayjv.org. This is Your Wetlands. I'm Jerry Kaye.